You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Sorry about that. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is October the 23rd, Friday, obviously. Always great to join you, and I hope you've all had a great week. And it's certainly been an eventful week, if any of you were watching the Hillary show, if you want to call it that, in Congress. But there's so many other things going on as well, and especially in the immigration arena, and that's really what most of my focus will be on this evening. No shocker there. But again, for those of you new to the program, I welcome you, and I'd like you to check out a couple of websites. My own personal website, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, one word, michaelcutler.net. I'm also a senior fellow with a terrific organization, Californians for Population Stabilization. It's a mouthful. Their website is a lot easier to remember. It's capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. I write for Front Page Magazine, The Social Contract. I've got articles over at Progressives for Immigration Reform. And, you know, I just keep watching the debates, and I keep watching the coverage of the campaigns and the statements being made by the politicians. And you know, what strikes me is everybody seems to be so surprised when politicians fail to keep the promises they make when they're on the campaign trail. And I don't know if it's the fault of the politicians or the foolishness of the American people, the American voters. Because if you listen to what the politicians are telling you, they are telling you that they will attempt to do the impossible. You know, when I was a kid, I was always interested in science and engineering, and there was always some guy who came along with the perpetual motion machine. You know, once you start this thing running, it will need no energy and it will run forever. Well, anybody who understands anything about physics and engineering knows that that's not possible. It's just not possible. There's friction, there's all kinds of energy losses. It's just one of those nice things to talk about. I'm going to build a perpetual motion machine, and once we start it, we won't have to do anything. It'll run perfectly. Well, as foolish as that notion is, think about the politicians who promise to create new jobs, and then in the very next sentence talk about bringing in hundreds of thousands of more high-tech workers from around the world, and then talk about the need to provide legal status, and they say 11 or 12 million. It's probably more like 40 million illegal aliens in the United States. And right now, today, we are admitting more foreign workers into the United States, people from other countries who under our laws are entitled to work, some of whom, in order to maintain their immigration status, must work. And so we are bringing in more authorized foreign workers than the number of new jobs that we are creating. How does that work? And now to talk about bringing in even more foreign workers, does anybody really think that this is going to work? How do you justify bringing in more workers than the number of new jobs and then promise the American people, we will help you? We will help you. We will help the struggling middle class. We're going to create the jobs. Who's we? Do they have a mouse in their pocket? And then the argument, of course, is that, well, the foreign workers want to come here, and they're all entrepreneurs. They're all going to start new companies. And yes, you have a handful of foreign entrepreneurs who have started companies. Elon Musk is a great example. He started PayPal. He started SpaceX. He has the Tesla car company. Fine. How many Elon Musks do you think we're admitting out of the hundreds of thousands of lawfully working aliens that we admit every year. Most of the people who come here to work in the United States are not here to create new companies and jobs. They're here to create jobs. Rather, they're here to take jobs. And most of the time, they're taking the jobs that Americans were doing. And nobody ever says anything, but they clap like a bunch of trained seals. I've seen it. Ted Cruz, I was there in Washington in July of 2013. We're going to help America lead by bringing in the best and brightest from around the world. And these people went crazy. You would have thought they would have been promised brand new Ferraris in perfect Ferrari red and with free maintenance for life, the way they were cheering. What we are talking about is the displacement of American workers. And this doesn't even work out in the long term for anybody, not for America, not even for the companies who are betraying us. Because, you see, we are destroying America's middle class, basically the consumer base. The very wealthy, for the most part, don't care what they drive around in. I know a guy who's a billionaire, and the last time I saw him, he was driving around in a rusted, old, beat-up station wagon that had to be at least 15 years old. He doesn't need a new car to prove he is who he is. He owns buildings all over Manhattan the way you might own property in Monopoly. And yes, some of the wealthy buy nice cars and stuff, but do you really think they're buying enough cars and enough of everything that it's going to keep the machinery humming in our factories? Of course not. So it's the middle class that had been the consumers, the people that bought the cars and the people that bought the stereos and the fancy equipment and so forth. They scrimped and saved because we were about being consumers. And, you know, it was George W. after 9/11 who said that it was an act of patriotism to spend money, keep the economy going, especially after the market melted down. The stock market and the banking industry all went to hell. And they said, well, the solution is to spend money. And to encourage us to spend money, they gave us an interest rate basically of zero. Well, how's that working out now? You know, you look at where the economy is, and it is in the tank. Nobody has disposable incomes. And in fact, if you look at the studies that are out there, folks, the average American family is taking home less money than they did 20 years ago. But the prices have not remained stagnant. And yes, Social Security has said, well, there's going to be no raise this year, no COLA, no cost of living allowance, because gasoline has gotten cheap, so everything else is fine. Try to buy food, try to buy clothing, try to buy anything. Everything else has not gone down. But it's all about fantasies. We have a 5% unemployment rate. Yes, if you ignore the plight of 93, or maybe by now it's 95 million unemployed workers or underemployed workers. They just did a study, and Fox News reported on it this morning. It's expected that the kids coming out of college now who are first starting their careers, if they're fortunate enough to be able to get a job, and that's a rarity today, they will not be able to retire until they are 75 years of age. Why? Most can't afford to buy houses. Most don't have pensions. Most aren't earning enough money. And they're going to have student loans that will debilitate them. This is a prescription for a disaster. And the more foreign workers who come into America, the more money that gets wired out of America, so it screws up America's national debt. We're running into the debt ceiling again. And I want to give you something to think about. When people like Jeb Bush, who apparently his campaign is on the rocks, not surprisingly, what a shock, illegal immigration is an act of love, so is burglary. You know, we're talking about illegal immigration, not legal, but illegal. But if you could get rid of the money being wired home by foreign workers working in the United States, both legal and illegal, you're talking about at least $200 billion. And when you take the multiplier effect into account, what we're really saying is that if you could stop the remittance flow from foreign workers, you could absolutely stop America's national debt from growing every year. Because the national debt is growing because of the fact that you have so many people that are now relying on the economic safety net programs, and you have so many foreign workers who are sending their paychecks out of the United States. We are now educating and providing medical care for tens of millions of foreign nationals in our country, for the children of illegal aliens in our country. The list goes on and on and on. So if you want to look at the economics of immigration, it is non-sustainable. And then the companies are complaining their earnings are down, nobody's buying anything. You listen to the business reports, and they talk about consumer confidence not being there. It's not only consumer confidence, folks. You can't make purchases without money. You can't pay for a new car with belly button lint. You can't buy a new suit from the nail clippings when you trim your fingernails. What are you going to give the shopkeeper if you have no money? You know, it gets to a point where you can no longer afford to buy anything. So if you can't buy anything, the economy stalls. As the economy stalls, more people are laid off. The tax base shrinks. This isn't rocket science. You don't need to have an MBA. You don't need a PhD in economics from the Wharton School of Business. I mean, this is common sense. You know, Henry Ford was brilliant. I wasn't a big fan of his for a bunch of reasons, but his acumen as a businessman was spot on. Henry Ford understood that his Model T Ford would not be a success unless the people who manufactured it in the factories earned enough money to buy a car. If they couldn't have bought the car, and if other workers at that end of the pay scale couldn't have purchased the cars, it would have just been a little novelty and it would have disappeared and we'd all be riding around on buckboards and on horseback today. The reason that Ford was so successful was that the cars were affordable by the people who manufactured them in the factories. The American people don't have the kind of disposable income that would get the American economy moving again. We are in a race to the bottom. I've been writing about this for Front Page Magazine. I wrote an article, and I called it Why Bother? And you know, when you look at what the Border Patrol, or CBP actually, Customs and Border Protection, talks about in their mission statement, they make it so crystal clear just how important the work that they do is, you know. And they really lay it out well. They talk about what it is that they do for America. And also what's additionally interesting is that on the website, when you look at this CBP website, they also note the resources that are allocated to Border Protection. And basically, we're talking about two separate entities here. One entity that we're looking at are the inspectors at the ports of entry who inspect both passengers and cargo entering the United States. And then you've got, of course, the Border Patrol. And the Border Patrol's mission is to protect us from between ports of entry. So there was an article that was published this past week, Immigration Enforcement, Why Bother? For Front Page Magazine. If you get a chance, it's free online. Just go to frontpagemag.org. I think it's .org or .com. But go check it out. But if you look at what – let me read this to you. This is on the website for CBP's mission. Now, the reason I want you to think about what they say is that when members of Congress, when the President of the United States, when the key officials in the government, and when you listen to the journalists and the economists and all these other talking heads, oh, they're here undocumented. There was a woman on Cavuto today, a Democratic strategist. I'm not sure what their strategy is or any politicians. I mean, look, both parties really are bad. I call them the repugnant cans and the Democrats. Oh, we must stop using the word alien. There's some congressman from Texas. We're not going to use the word alien anymore in our law. We're going to change the word. This is all about blurring the distinction between what it is to be here legally, illegally. This is a free-for-all, but it's not free-for-all. And they make light of the fact that someone's uninspected. Oh, he's undocumented, undocumented. No, he's uninspected. She is uninspected. That was the term we used as agents. If you arrested somebody and my boss came over and said, what was his entry? I'd say EWI, EWI. And my boss immediately knew what those three letters mean. EWI, entry without inspection. It wasn't entry without documentation. There is no such thing. There is no. It's a lie. It's a fantasy. It's Orwellian. And by the way, please, when you're out there having these discussions, this is not about being politically correct. You know, if I hear it one more time, I think my head's going to explode. There is nothing PC, nothing politically correct going on here. This is about obfuscation. Political correctness is something I agree with. You don't use the N-word. You don't use language that insults or denigrates another human being. And think about the word denigrate and what its origins are. That's horrendous language. It's in poor taste, and it's disgusting, in my judgment. And I'm a big fan of the First Amendment, but you don't go around insulting people and humiliating people. And that, in my world, is what political correctness is about. There is nothing humiliating about the word alien. And when you ask someone, why is it such a bad word? Oh, it sounds like aliens. It sounds like the invaders from Mars. Nonsense. I don't even know if they believe that nonsense. The reason this whole business started goes back to Jimmy Carter, and it was about obfuscating the difference between a foreign national, an alien, who enters the United States legally, jumps through all the hoops, waits his or her turn, and somebody who runs the border. So this idea that we're going to use the term undocumented worker, oh, they're okay, they're just missing a couple of pieces of paper. Nonsense. They are uninspected. And you know what that inspection process costs us, both at ports of entry and to make certain that people don't evade that inspection process? And that's the job of the Border Patrol. Let me read this to you. This is from the CBP mission statement, Customs and Border Protection. I wonder how many members of Congress have read this, along with the 9/11 Commission report. We are the guardians of our nation's borders. We are America's front line. We safeguard the American homeland at and between our borders. We protect the American public against terrorists and the instruments of terror. We steadfastly enforce the laws of the United States while fostering our nation's economic security through lawful international trade and travel. We serve the American public with vigilance, integrity, and professionalism. I began my career with the INS back in 1971 as an immigration inspector assigned to John F. Kennedy International Airport in New York City. Does this sound like a minor deal? We protect the American public against terrorists and instruments of terror. How can you do that when people sneak past them and then we're willing to give them lawful status? They didn't go through that inspections process. They are uninspected. They are trespassing. It's not that they're missing a piece of paper. It galls me to listen to the lies, knowing full well what this means. And by the way, today it was released, information was released, or it was revealed, that the FBI is now has opened over 900 investigations into ISIS, people inside the United States who are likely to try to do something. Yes, there are American kids who are disenfranchised, kids who are having emotional, psychological problems, kids who are just prone to violence, and somehow the social media that ISIS and Al-Qaeda has been using as a recruitment tool apparently has been working with some of these kids. But we're also talking about lots of foreign individuals who have come to America, become United States citizens, or at least gotten lawful status, and are now waiting for that phone call, the tap on the shoulder, or that opportunity to present itself where they will act as individuals. And so everyone says, oh, they're lone wolves. Well, yes and no. Yes and no. They're out there looking for that target of opportunity. So with that for the backdrop, And you have CBP saying that the purpose that we serve is to protect Americans from that threat of terrorism. And then you have millions of people sneaking past them, so they're not being screened, they're not being inspected, and they're undocumented. Does anybody really believe that level of stupidity? Now, if you go to my article, you'll notice, and by the way, when I write stuff, unlike the liars in Washington from both political parties, and there's no shortage of liars, you know, that's probably where anybody who's practicing plastic surgery should go. Go to Washington. There are lots of people in dire need of nose jobs. They've joined the Pinocchio Club, both parties. Does anybody really believe that this makes any sense to call people from other countries who sneak into our country undocumented and say, oh, we can't deport them all, so let's give them lawful status? We don't know who they are, and there will be no face-to-face interview. There will be no field investigation. This is an act of national suicide. It goes beyond naive. It goes beyond naive. And so my question to you, and as I say, if you go to my website, you can read this article, but what I provide you here are facts, not conjecture. I didn't get a wild idea last Thursday, so now I'm spewing nonsense, which seems to be what most reporters do these days, so-called journalists, God help us. This is fact-based. And if you go to the performance and accountability report for the fiscal year 2014, that report says that for that year of 2014, Customs and Border Protection had 59,544 employees working as inspectors, working as Border Patrol agents, or working as support personnel. And that was simply to secure our borders and to inspect people and cargo entering the United States. 59,544. That was about a year ago. I'm sure the numbers went up a little bit. I know they were trying to get some more people. Does this sound like an inconsequential operation? 59,544 employees. It's remarkable. It's almost double the number of people who work for the NYPD, New York City Police Department. Their annual budget, $13.9 billion. But it's okay if you sneak past the Border Patrol. It's okay because we want you to stay and we want to give you citizenship. So here's my recommendation. Would anybody out there feel comfortable if we fired all the Border Patrol agents, fired all the inspectors at ports of entry, and if we allowed airplanes arriving in the United States from other countries? I don't care if it's from Pakistan, I don't care if it's from China or Moscow or England or Jamaica or Bolivia, pick a country, and we'll just have those airplanes pull into the gate next to the domestic arrivals, and all these people from other countries can grab their suitcases and their other luggage, not talk to anybody, just go on their merry way, because after all, undocumented, documented, it's all the same, and let them hop in a cab or jump into a car driven by one of their buddies and disappear into the night. And we could save $13.9 billion. Would anybody out there feel comfortable with that? If you feel comfortable with that, go to the hospital and have them check for a flatline EEG. You're brain dead. But yet, every single day, we have people running our border. And what is the difference if they run the border between the United States and Mexico, the United States and Canada, or the coastline? So now let me get to this other part of the CBP mission, and here's what they lay out in that report that I just noted. Do they say that we are the guardians of our nation's borders, right? We protect the American public against terrorists and the instruments of terror. We steadfastly enforce the laws of the United States while fostering our nation's economic security through lawful international trade and travel. But apparently there's lots of people doing it unlawfully, but that's okay too, right? They're undocumented, undocumented. But it goes on and says this. CBP's approximate 60,000 employees manage, control, and protect the nation's borders at and between 328 ports of entry. CBP is responsible for protecting more than 5,000 miles of border with Canada, 1,900 miles of border with Mexico, and 95,000 miles of shoreline. And yet, what do we hear from the likes of Ted Cruz? Once we secure the Mexican border, we can give everybody here an official identity document and permission to work. Never mind that there's no capacity to interview 40 million people or do field investigations for 40 million people. And when you hear the argument, well, they're already in the labor force, let me tell you what. If we do an amnesty program, there are millions of people who are not yet here who will sneak into America, claim to have been here for whatever the required period of time is, and be given employment authorization and an identity document, even though we're not even certain as to what their country of citizenship is, let alone what their true name is. This is a government-sanctioned invasion of the United States of America, period. And the people who are now working in the United States in violation of law will now be given permission to work, which means they can become direct competition for American and lawful immigrant workers. So my premise about why bother is, why are we bothering to conduct inspections at ports of entry, employ all those people, when it doesn't really matter how you come here? You know, it's about mind over matter. The government doesn't mind, so it doesn't matter. Why bother going to college today as an American kid when you know that corporations, that Bill Gates and Zuckerberg hates you, don't want to hire you, want to fire your parents if their parents are working in the computer industry and they've been doing it? You know, Hewlett Packard, or used to be Hewlett Packard, now it's HP, just canned 30,000 Americans a couple of weeks ago. Disney Company, and I am boycotting them. I will, you know, I'd love to see the new Star Wars movie. That's not happening. Will not see it until it's free on cable. I'm not even going to pay to see it, you know, where you have to do it on demand. Not doing it. Because I will not give Walt Disney Company one bloody penny. They fired 500 American programmers and told these folks, you will not get your severance package, even though we're shafting you. We're screwing you, we're putting it to you, and you're not getting your severance package unless you train the people we have hired from India and make sure they know how to do your job before you go out the door. That is the screwing of Americans. I will not go to Disney. I urge you to avoid Disney like the plague. They're doing it to us. We need to do it to them. Corporations need to pay a price, and the price should be boycott. You fire Americans, we fire you. We can do without seeing those dopey movies. There is no reason to put money into those companies. If you own stock in the companies, sell it. My advice, get out of it. Go to the stockholders' meetings. Tell these people what they can do. Recommend they attempt an anatomical impossibility. But it's increasing that companies around the United States are firing Americans left and right, left and right. And what are they doing? Bringing in foreign workers. We now have 400,000 foreign students studying science, technology, engineering, and math. Isn't it remarkable? We're told how lousy the American schools are. Oh, our schools are awful. Oh, our schools are terrible. Our teachers suck. They can't teach. You know, there are bad teachers. I was the Parents Association president of my daughter's public school. Yes, there are bad teachers, and there are bad doctors, and there are certainly stinking, miserable, lousy politicians. There's a bunch of lousy lawyers out there also. Not all lawyers, but enough. Every profession has their winners and their losers. Every profession has that round peg trying to squeeze into the square hole, or the square peg trying to squeeze into the round hole. We've met them all. We've seen them. But does anybody stop and say, wait a minute, wait a minute? We've had all these kids flooding into the United States from across the Mexican border and elsewhere, and we are dumping them into schools around the United States. These kids don't speak English, many of them, and the Congressional Budget Office about 6 years ago said that it costs between 20 to 40% more to educate a child who cannot speak English fluently. So you imagine you're a teacher. Imagine you're a teacher. You have some child in your classroom who's disruptive, who can't speak the language, doesn't have discipline to sit in the classroom quietly, because this is a new experience for that child, because the country they come from isn't like that. And there are so many of these kids flooding into certain neighborhoods. Pity that teacher that sits in that classroom and tries to keep a lid on chaos. And then, of course, we blame the teachers. Let's fire the teachers. No, let's fire the students. You know, I don't care if you're Mario Andretti. If I give you a race car with a seized engine and four flat tires and an empty gas tank and scream at you for not winning the race, is it really the driver's fault? Is it really the driver's fault? And as lousy as our schools are, isn't it remarkable that we have hundreds of thousands of foreign students who are studying the STEM curriculum in the United States? And then you have these political hacks and other people saying, oh, great, let's staple green cards onto their diplomas. Mitt Romney made that point. And I went ballistic. Sure, let's import more competition for struggling American workers. Let's really put the nails into the coffin of America's middle class. You need to understand what is happening. American kids go to school. They spend 4, 5, 6 years of their lives working their butts off, trying to get the grades, trying to graduate with that degree, spending a fortune on their education. And then, no matter what, they're all dressed up with nowhere to go, because we have imported what Ted Cruz and Rubio and these other individuals referred to as the world's best and brightest, even as they spew nonsense about American exceptionalism. Doesn't anybody see the contradiction? Folks, how can you talk about American exceptionalism in the one hand and turn around and say, and we're going to import the world's best and brightest? Hillary Clinton stands there and talks about wage equality and fighting wage inequality. And then she talks about Bill Gates and the billionaires and the gazillionaires and the trillionaires and the money and how unfair it all is. Meanwhile, the Clinton Foundation has partnered with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to make certain that women and girls around the world are getting their fair share. How about women and girls inside the United States of America? And while we're at it, boys and girls, how about American men and boys as well? You see, when you hear about and around the world, they are literally globalists. This is putting American workers who have the skills, who have the experience, who have the training, who have the desire, who have the ability, we're forcing them to compete with the third world. You know, where you work your heart out for a bowl of warm rice and a couple of pennies or whatever they serve up in China or elsewhere, pick the currency of choice. Is that the American dream? You know, there's always room for more oarsmen on a slave ship. There is always more room for oarsmen on a slave ship. And that's what's happening, you see. It's all about, oh, the work Americans are too lazy to do or too stupid to do, and we elect people that say this about us. Do you ever see the dirtiest jobs on cable? Goodness gracious, there isn't a job an American won't do for a living wage. My dad was a construction worker. My father will always be my biggest hero. He trudged off to work, and it didn't matter if it was 0 or 100 degrees outside. Didn't matter if he was sick as a dog. He went to work, and when I'd say, Dad, you look terrible, why don't you take the day off? He'd say to me, Mike, are you going to pay the mortgage? He went to work that way when he was dying of lung cancer, and I was 19, and he was 57. And he wasn't unique. I mean, he was unique to me. There's nobody in the world that can pass to my dad. But think of all those construction workers when you pass those job sites. They're not complaining about the heat. They're not complaining about the cold. Construction is a dangerous profession. Yes, profession. It's a trade. I don't think they're any less valuable than a candy-ass banker or accountant, bean counter, whatever. Look, we all have an instrument to play in this great orchestra that's America. And what stands between the American worker and that job and the ability to support himself and his family increasingly are the politicians that we elect to represent us. Think about that. It's the politicians that are bringing in the competition, unfair competition. And those same politicians dare stand there and criticize American workers, and we elected these bozos? We're the bozos. So that was why I wrote this article, Why Bother? Why bother having a military? Because if you can't secure your borders against the entry of terrorists and spies and enemy combatants, you have no justification for a military. Immigration is an extension of what the military does. The military conducts operations overseas. The mission of immigration is to do the same sort of work up close and in person. And let's remember, it was put under the DHS for a reason. Of course, today, DHS stands for the Department of Homeland Surrender, but that's another story altogether. But this is what we're facing today. And then I wrote an article, they just published it a day or two ago, over at capsweb.org, Californians for Population Stabilization. And I called it Administration Poised to Provide More Jobs for Aliens. Now, you know, when the foreign national comes to the United States and attends school, many of them are entitled to have optional practical training. You know, you've learned how to be a computer programmer, so you can spend a year working for some company, putting those skills to use so that, you know, maybe help pay back the bills, whatever. Fine. Now, up until now, they've been entitled to a year of practical training. The administration now wants those foreign students to get 3 years of practical training. Not 1 year, but 3 years, 36 months. Well, what do you think that's going to do to Americans who have similar skill sets? And the way that the laws are, and the way that a bunch of things are, employers save tons of money by getting rid of Americans and hiring the foreign student workers. I'm going to tell you why, and I don't know if you know this. Number one, those foreign student workers are not covered by Obamacare. So right off the top, if you pay that employee the same as you would an American, you're saving $3,000 a year because of Obamacare. That's right off the top, a minimum of $3,000, presuming you would rather pay the penalty than provide the health insurance, item one. Item number two, you, as an employer, do not put money for that foreign worker, that foreign student, into Medicare or the Social Security Trust Fund. So, you know, we hear this nonsense, oh, these people pay taxes. Listen. If you hire an American as an employer, you have to put money into the Social Security Trust Fund. You have to put money into the Medicare Trust Fund. Those trust funds are going bankrupt because every time they fire an American and they bring in a foreign worker, guess what's happening? That's another employee where money is not going into Social Security. Did you realize that? That's what they're doing. So we are bankrupting America, and Hillary Clinton stands there and rails about all this, income equality. Alan Greenspan testified for Chuck Schumer, Hillary's bosom buddy, my former congressman who was never my representative here in New York. And they talk about income equality. We're going to do everything we can to reduce inequality in wages. And how does Greenspan say he wants to do this back on April 30th, 2009, when he testified for Schumer's Immigration Subcommittee in the Senate? By no longer shielding American workers from foreign competition, to cut that wage premium. Wage premium is another word for salary. Think about it, folks. Calling American high-tech workers the privileged elite, earning this wage premium because we're not making them compete with people from around the world. Well, the Labor Department used to run immigration prior to the Second World War. That was exactly why we had immigration, to shield American workers from foreign competition. So here we are in the middle of a war on terror, in the middle of problems with transnational gangs, in the middle of an economic meltdown of the banking system and the U.S. economy. And if this was the Starship Enterprise, there's Alan Greenspan calling for shields down. Shields down. They're all calling for shields down. Rubio said we need to modernize the immigration laws. His idea of modernization is to make it far easier to bring in hundreds of thousands of high-tech foreign workers. Modernization? Do you think Rubio gives a damn about American workers? Absolutely not. Do you think Cruz does? Rand Paul was upset. He did an interview at CBS a number of months ago. I've reported on it in articles that I've written. And he said he voted against comprehensive immigration reform. You're going to love this. That bill was S-744 because it continued to impose limits on H-1B and other work visas. And he said there should be absolutely no limit. You know, he's a libertarian. No limits. Bring in as many foreign workers as you want. But meanwhile, they all talk about how, well, we're going to create new jobs. Folks, it doesn't matter if they created a million new jobs. You've got millions of foreign nationals working in the United States who should not be, and more coming every day, and they are entitled to work, and they're entitled to take some of the best jobs. You know, I don't know if you know this, but even going back to the 70s, when I was an inspector at Kennedy Airport, there was a J-1 program, which is run by the State Department as an exchange visitor program, to bring kids to America so they will love America. And we were in shock as inspectors because we were admitting kids, and my understanding is that Ted Kennedy was behind this doozy, and I was on with Neil Cavuto a couple of years ago talking about this particular program. Guess where they had kids working who were coming in from Ireland? They were working in the hotels in upstate New York and driving ice cream trucks. Think what a nice job that would be for an American college kid who's trying to earn enough money to pay tuition, or a young lady, either or, you know, an American, drive an ice cream truck, make a good living, and have a decent summer, and then go back to school. Instead, we brought in thousands of kids from Ireland and other countries. For what purpose? To drive ice cream trucks. Of course there's a shortage of American kids to do that kind of work, right? You see, this is all about doing everything possible to destroy the wage structure of the United States of America. And we're told that this is only a matter of concern for the super conservatives. I'm a registered Democrat. I'm a labor guy. How in the world is this insanity consistent with anybody who stands for the United States of America? These aren't left-right issues, folks. The newscasters out there spewing this nonsense are either lying through their teeth who are so ignorant they can't find their way out of the studio. They probably have to have someone take them by the hand and walk them from makeup to the studio to sit in front of the camera. You know, I was listening to Governor Huckabee, and he was on Fox News, and, you know, Huckabee used to have his program there, and I've had coffee with the governor a number of times when I was at Fox News. And he's all upset because the pollsters are saying that his ratings are doing lousy, he's not getting the money he needs, you know, he's finished, he's wiped up and washed out, whatever you want to say, washed up. He was angry, and he said, you know, those pollsters who sit there and say these things have no idea what they're talking about, but they put them in front of the cameras and they run their mouths. Well, you know what? He's right. When they talk about the Latino vote, and I've said it before, and I feel so compelled to talk about it tonight, is that not the most despicable form of profiling you've ever heard? The Latino vote. So that means anybody who has a Hispanic last name, you know, Rodriguez, Garcia, Munoz, whatever, everybody who's Hispanic wants the same things, thinks the same way, has the same aspirations. The Jewish vote, yeah, those Jews are all alike. And being Jewish, I have to tell you, that offends me particularly. Oh, the black vote, right, you've seen one black, you've seen them all. Isn't that what they're saying? And these are the same alleged journalists that if they thought law enforcement profiled, and there are times when profiling is appropriate and, in fact, essential. It's not simply about stopping somebody because of his or her race. It's a bunch of components being taken into account. But when you talk about the Latino vote, all you're looking at is, what's that person's last name? What's that person's ethnicity? Ethnic politics, divide and conquer. It stops just one stop short of inciting racial warfare in America. It's like this Black Lives Matter. Look, every life matters. Every life matters. And when you start to divide America up that way, you're balkanizing the country. E pluribus unum, out of many, one, is what America was all about. We're in this together. And now we're being told about the different factions. Well, if you don't vote for open borders, the Rodriguezes of the United States won't vote for you. Well, then you should speak to some of the folks that I've met in my travels around this amazing country, and I'm going to be back in South Carolina again next week. I've met many people whose ancestry goes right back to Mexico or Latin America or wherever, and they are furious, and they feel insulted, and they should. You want to talk about being politically correct? How in the world are you politically correct when you talk about the Latino vote? Don't use the word alien, but you can talk about the Latino vote. Does anybody see a contradiction here? And no one says a word. Everyone just sits there and says, well, I guess that's the way it is. Folks, critical thinking. If you think the word alien is insulting, how about the Latino vote? So what does that mean? Latinos are lawbreakers? Latinos don't care about America's future? Really? Do you know how many Americans I have met who are members of the armed forces who are Latino? Do you think that they care about America's security, America's sovereignty? They've put their lives on the line, and I will tell you, they're not happy about this business. But that doesn't stop these nitwits, and I don't care what network you want to talk about, the Latino vote. It doesn't make any sense. Now, there's something else to talk about, very important. The president now wants to release, and is in the middle of trying to change the sentencing rules, we're going to release nonviolent drug dealers. It's not fair to them. We had a New York City police officer, 33 years old, killed by somebody who was put into some diversion program. Oh, it wasn't fair. This guy was in jail. He has an extensive rap sheet. He's a violent thug. The judge who released him stands by the decision, not even saying, wow, you know, who has a crystal ball? Who could have imagined? No, no apology. We did the right thing. We did the right thing. And a police officer, in fact, of color, a man who was from Guyana originally, third-generation police officer. His father and grandfather served as police officers in their home country of Guyana. Is going home in a casket. But don't let that bother you, because we have to look out for the rights of the accused, not the victims. For all this talk about America being a land of immigrants, how about a novel thought, America being a land of citizens? And you know, I've been saying it for the longest time that the best metric for determining border security is the price and availability of heroin. Interesting study. George W. Bush came to the White House when, after Border Patrol agents fired Ramos and Compeon, two Border Patrol agents who were caught up in a situation with a Mexican drug smuggler, a dirtbag who was routinely running drugs into the United States. They wound up wounding him in a shootout. They went to jail. One guy wound up getting beat up so badly, he was put into solitary confinement for a year. They don't even do that in Guantanamo to these terrorist dirtbags. And this guy was just doing his job. He didn't go to work saying, wow, I hope I get to shoot somebody today. I was an agent for 26 years, and before that I was an inspector. I carried a weapon, carried a badge. Every morning I got up, I put my gun into my holster, and I said a little prayer, dear God, please don't let me need to use this thing today on duty. No rational person wants to shoot somebody. So there was this war on the Border Patrol. Our border became wide open. When the Minutemen, American citizens, stood watch on the border, Bush stood shoulder to shoulder with then-Mexican President Vicente Fox and called those dedicated, concerned Americans vigilantes. Has anybody forgotten that? Vicente Fox, the paradigm of decency and morality, who talked about the Mexicans who would do the work that, quote, even blacks would not do. Could you imagine a more racist pig than that? Even the work American blacks won't do. And who did George W. side with? Vicente Fox. You see, it's both sides of the aisle, and it boils my blood. So we sent Border Patrol agents to secure the Iraqi border, left our border wide open. Well, you know what the reaction is now? They just released a study, folks. Since 2002, heroin addiction has more than doubled in the United States. And I just find it remarkable that they're using 2002 as the starting point, essentially the beginning of the Bush administration. And Trump said that Bush bore responsibility for 9/11. It was Clinton. It was Reagan. It was Carter. It was this notion that we're not going to arrest illegal aliens during the census so we can gerrymander districts. That bit of genius insanity thunk up by the peanut man himself, Jimmy Carter. You had Ronald Reagan, who gave us the first amnesty, didn't hire more agents. And, of course, after he got what he wanted, he said, oh, that was just a mistake, a terrible thing. Nonsense. And I want you to know that Reagan also gave illegal aliens coverage under, I'm sorry, it was Bush that gave the illegal aliens coverage under the privacy law. Michael Chertoff and George Bush got together, issued an executive order. Yeah, here we go again, more executive orders. But it was under the Reagan administration that the amnesty applications that were part of that amnesty, part of immigration reform of 86, had a provision that prohibited immigration agents from sharing information contained in amnesty files with any other agency, whether it was the FBI, DEA, local homicide detectives. Anybody who wanted that information had to go get a court order. It was a laborious process, time-consuming. Didn't matter if the guy was a mass murderer and was likely out there killing more people. You want to see that file? Any immigration agent who would give that file without getting that court order from a judge was committing a felony. You could go to jail. You could lose your job. You could lose your pension. Ronald Reagan gave us that gift. It's both sides of the aisle. And this brought us to where we are now. Immigration chaos. There's no other way to describe it. And this young lady was on with Cavuto today and said, oh, documented, undocumented, who cares? We're a nation of immigrants. The difference between an immigrant, folks, and an illegal alien is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. Isn't that a novel thought? To have integrity to the language that we use so we understand what we're dealing with. We are being swindled by our own government. We're losing our jobs because of the people that we elected to represent us. We're losing our lives because of the people that we elected to represent us. And not just because of terror. Look at the drug trade. And when you go to the ICE website, and they talk about this big takedown they just did with synthetic drugs and how the money was funding terrorism. Well, what are we doing to prevent the flood of narcotics into the United States? Our border is nothing more than a speed bump. And when the drug cartels send their drugs to the United States, they don't put it in a package and mail it to somebody and say to them, could you please sell this for me on eBay? It doesn't work that way. They bring in their entire organization, enforcers, people that are good with money. It's like a whole army. It's like opening up a car dealership. You need the salesman, you need the accountant, you need the mechanics, you know. It's everybody. It's a whole team effort. And they bring them into the United States, they sell the narcotics, and most violent crime in the United States today has a clear nexus between narcotics and gangs and our border. And that border today has been all but erased. All but erased. They are blurring the lines, the line between legal alien and illegal alien, and blurring another line, and those lines are the borders of the United States. And when you can hear the politicians talking about, well, we just got to secure that Mexican border, and by the way, that means if you look at the way the original law was, it was a travesty. 90% operational control over the high traffic areas. What's a high traffic area? What happens when the smuggler moves 30 miles one way or the other? 90%. Who's going to figure out what the percentage is? You know, that's not the way you would go about a program. You talk about we're going to shut the border down and mean it. And mean it. But meanwhile, look at what they say on the website. 328 ports of entry. 5,000 miles of border with Canada, 95,000 miles of coastline, plenty of opportunities for ships to come in surreptitiously and drop off their load of passengers or maybe, God forbid, a weapon of mass destruction. But let's keep on watching that Mexican border. This is astonishing, folks. You know, I always like to end my commentaries by making the point that democracy is not a spectator sport. You really need to be involved. Please go to the rallies, whether it's someone running for Congress, for the presidency, for Senate, House of Representatives, for the mayoralty races, the gubernatorial races. Get your voice heard. Make it clear to these politicians we're not as dopey as they hope we are. When they talk about bringing in the best and brightest, you remind them that the American people are the best and brightest. And when they talk about it, you say, no, citizens first. You see, we need to push back. We need to write to the newspapers and write to the TV stations and tell them that we have had it with their lies and their nonsense as well. There's an awful lot at stake at this coming election, folks, and we really need to pay attention, and we certainly need to get our voices heard. And that's the work that only Americans can do. I hope you'll be one of them. If you like the program, please tell your friends and neighbors about it. Be part of my bucket brigade of truth. Let's turn this thing around. Let's finally remind the politicians that they work for us and not the other way around. Have a great weekend, everybody. It was great joining you tonight. I look forward to seeing you again next week, same time, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a great weekend, everybody.